Hey listeners, Jason here. This is a special crossover episode where I was interviewed by Nicole Turnbull of Neon Shed. It is part of a virtual summit Nicole has put together called The Seven Dark Sides of Work. I'm one of 30 speakers discussing how to prevent, manage and eliminate the seven dark sides of work and increase self-care and recover from burnout or workplace trauma. The virtual summit runs from the 17th to 28th of October. Visit neonshed.com.au/summit to find out more and to register. While I've got your attention, our free workplace mental health benchmarking tool is available for companies with more than 250 employees to sign up to until October 31. Visit mentalhealthbenchmark.com to learn more. Now, on to this episode.
From Flourish DX, this is the Psych Health and Safety Podcast. With workplace mental health becoming a safety prerogative, this is the source of information on psychological injury prevention and health promotion.
Hi everyone, thanks for joining us today where we shine light on mental health and wellbeing. I'm Nicole, the Chief Courage Officer at Neon Shed, and I'm coming to you from the beautiful Warramai country on the Mid-North Coast. I'm joined by Jason from Flourish DX to talk about how to prevent harm and promote employee wellbeing at work. Jason is a psychologist, podcast host, and the founder of Flourish DX. Welcome Jason, and thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me, Nicole.
So why did you start Flourish DX?
Well, we started the company originally as a face-to-face consulting company focusing around issues like sleep health, mental health, with more of a wellbeing focus. But it became really apparent that, you know, just taking resilience-based or positive psychology approaches within workplaces and teaching people about self-care wasn't making a difference. What we really needed to do was to move upstream and think systemically about what are the root causes of work-related stress, and particularly what was within the employer's remit or ability to control in order to influence mental health and well-being. So that involved taking more of a psychological health and safety approach or applying risk management to psychosocial hazards, so workplace stresses. Unfortunately, or fortunately for us, because we're able to break new ground in this area, was that there was no real way to scale psychological health and safety. While some countries like UK, Canada, and Australia had brought out different tools to help measure psychosocial hazards using employee perception style methodology, they were either very raw. I mean, people at work at the time was an Excel spreadsheet, and they weren't very user-friendly. And so what we felt was there's actually going to be a need. We could see with regulation changes and the development of international standards like ISO 45003, there was going to be a real drive around psychological health and safety, but we're just lacking enterprise software tools to help that to scale well. Mm-hmm. So really, Flourish DX is all about how do we scale psychological health and safety to make it really accessible to every company, regardless of size, but particularly for those larger companies. How do we do really great consultation at depth and breadth to really understand risk and take actions to prevent harm to people in the first place?
Yeah, fantastic. Fantastic reason to develop the business as well is I've been in large organizations and small organizations, and it is tough. There's a lot to think about and do, and it sounds like you make things really easy for them in one particular area, so which is a really tough area.
It is tough, yeah. And our original hypothesis as a company was, hey, if we make psychosocial risk assessment easy and time efficient and make the data able to be analyzed really easily, will that increase companies' willingness to do psych health and safety and do it well? But there's still such, like you say, it's such a complex topic that companies are still, most companies who are doing this are really at the bleeding edge. It's not popular practice at the moment. But with new regulations that have come into effect, first of all, in New South Wales and, you know, other states will be bringing them in very shortly, is, you know, companies are now needing to do this. It's a health and safety obligation. And so now companies are getting started, but there's a lot of setup work that a company needs to do this well. It's not just about running an assessment and then deciding on some global level controls around training or policy. It really is changing the way a company operates.
Mm, so true. And from your experience, what happens when organizations don't prioritize mental health and well-being or don't really know what to do?
You have a continuum, right? So you have companies who have no interest in this at all. No doubt from like your own experience, which we've talked about before, is you know, people get burnt out. You know, there's cynicism in a company. There's, you know, less trust. There's less creativity. There's less willingness to take risks. There's more turnover. There's less loyalty. You know, there's a lot of negative outcomes, which then have an impact on business metrics, like, you know, how profitable is the company and, you know, how competitive are they? Mm. You then have companies who are maybe going, well, yeah, no, we believe mental health is something that is of interest and we should be doing something as a company, but they really, you know, are very low maturity and they go, well, we're just going to give people some training. You know, maybe we'll have an EAP in place for people to call if they need support. Maybe we'll, you know, have someone talk from a lived experience perspective at a lunch and learn. But what can happen is if a company, if an employee is working in a toxic work environment where they're not looking after some of those workplace stresses, like people are working 14 hours a day and their boss is a prick. Well, when that resilience training is thrown their way, they're going to be, they're going to feel quite patronized going, well, no, it's not, it's, this isn't a me problem. I shouldn't be the one fixing it. You know, the employer should be fixing this or my manager should be fixing this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's... companies need to give it the right level of priority. So it's not just enough to put lipstick on a pig and go, all right, we're just going to throw some, you know, very superficial level mental health initiatives at this. You really need it. If you really want to have an impact in this area, it really is a priority. And by prioritizing, it's not just going, oh, we think mental health is important. No, it's allocating resources, time. And as we're seeing in Australia in particular with the new regs, a lot of companies are now starting to hire specific resources to deal with psychological health and safety in their organizations, understanding that it does need to be resourced effectively and it does require a level of subject matter expertise to do it well.
Because you're dealing with people's brains and people's emotions and people's lives. It's not just a technical process that you can stick something in and, you know, make it run smoother. It's, yeah, there's a lot involved and the focus really hasn't been on mental health and well-being like it has been for physical health and safety. So yeah, your tools, and we're going to talk about that in a sec, sound like they really make things easier for people. But for organizations that do want to have a psychologically healthy and safe workplace, can you share what that actually looks like for them, so what they should be striving for?
Yeah, I mean, the gold standard is to integrate psychological health and safety into your approach to occupational health and safety. So rather than thinking about psychosocial risk management as a standalone process that happens in a vacuum, often I see it done very poorly, as in, oh, we've done an employee engagement survey, we've got some data around things like workload and, you know, supervisor relationships and that sort of thing. We'll just use that data to inform our understanding of what are the risks to the psychological health of our employees. And we're going to come up with controls at like a HR level. When we think about it being integrated though into an occupational health and safety management system, it's like, well, there's a lot of things that we need. We need leadership involvement. We need competency build up around psychosocial risk management. It's not just a, you know, two or three people in a company of thousands that need to understand this. Every level of management needs to understand this and their responsibilities, including down to the line manager level, involving them. Most psychosocial hazards, or at least a good half of them, are interpersonal related, right? So leadership behaviors, bullying and harassment, these sorts of things all happen at a team level and can be very different from team to team. Mm-hmm. So really need to be empowering line managers to understand what are psychosocial hazards, what are the ones that are happening in their team and how they can control it. But ultimately, this really does need to be surrounded by employee consultation. And that's the gap that we saw that wasn't happening well. It was very superficial, kind of top-down risk assessments that were occurring, going, oh, yeah, we understand what the risks are, so we'll just put in these training controls or policies, and that's going to deal with our psychosocial risks. Whereas, no, if we're taking a health and safety approach, we really need to be consulting deeply with employees and their representatives, really understanding what it is to walk a mile in their shoes, and also talk to them about, hey, if you're the boss for the day, you know, what are the most critical issues to you that, you know, if you were to fix would make work a better place to be, and how would you do that? You know, without guessing, you know, we think this control is going to work. And again, when we're looking at fixing it, we should be trying to get as close to the root of the source of the problem as possible. Mm-hmm. So rather than looking at administrative controls, as we often call them, from a physical health and safety perspective, like education and policy, you know, is it a role clarity issue that could be eliminated by having very clear job descriptions and regular performance discussions with employees about, you know, how their job's evolving maybe, and what are their responsibilities and how are you going with that, and what, you know, what additional training or support might you need to be successful in your role. Can we eliminate first, and can we reduce risk through designing work better rather than just automatically defaulting to, let's just train people on how to deal with crappy work environments better?
Yeah. How to deal with more, how to be more resilient so you can take on more. So many great points in there. And I think the way you explained, you know, the risk assessments and how they're currently done, might sound familiar to a lot of people who are watching and listening today. Can you share, though, your advice to employers and managers on what they can do? And you kind of have touched on this, but to improve mental health awareness and reduce that stigma.
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, we shouldn't expect our leaders to be psychologists. So I do see some companies going in and training leaders on mental illness symptoms. And if they're taking a mental health first aid training approach, for example, they do go quite a bit into quite significant mental illnesses. And that can really, if anything, probably increase mental illness stigma rather than reduce it. So rather than, you know, just, I'm not saying give up training around illness, I think we should focus more on the ones that are going to be more prevalent within a working population, which are depression and anxiety and substance abuse disorders. But what we do need to do is to start looking at psychosocial factors. So what about the work environment might be impacting on employee mental health. And in fact, the World Health Organization, just in the last couple of weeks, have released their guidelines for workplace mental health. And manager training is one of the big interventions they are saying that can prevent and promote wellbeing. But they do go into detail to say it shouldn't just be about understanding illness and directing people to care, but it's also about understanding the role of that a manager can have in managing the work environment. So things like workload and work pace and autonomy and role clarity and support and, you know, all these sorts of things, they are things that the manager can influence. So we need to be training them about that. And if we do that, I think managers will then feel that they can actually have an impact on employee wellbeing. Not feeling out of their depth, going, oh, I'm not a psychologist, I can't deal with, you know, these mental health issues. They're not supposed to. They're never supposed to. Yeah. But they very much can control a lot of the design and management of work for the people in their care. And I think we need to have more of a focus on that rather than trying to make leaders default psychologists.
Yeah, because there's already so much to think about and do as a manager. To have to be a psychologist for everyone is just too much. And
to jump in there, but the other thing is that line managers need to be supported by the functional team members in the organization, HR, health and safety, occupational health, injury management. And often these people lack a good understanding of psychosocial risk management. So before we're going to ask line managers to take on, as you say, line managers kind of are between a rock and a hard place. They're asked to do more and more these days with less. We need to make sure that our functional team members are very competent in this area and can support line managers in performing these roles. So mm-hmm. that comes down to competency frameworks, which if we're going to do psychological health and safety well, we need to make sure we understand who needs competence and build that competence across the organization, not just lump it on a few key people in HR or just put it all down to our line managers and expect them to swim, when even your normal average health and safety person is still just trying to understand what is a psychosocial hazard.
Yeah. It really does need to be a team effort. And as you said earlier, it include the workers, include the employees, because they know what's going to support them the most. And I do feel sometimes in all of those positions, people feel like they have to know everything and they have to have all the answers and they have to check the boxes, and they're almost hesitant to reach out and ask. But to ask, you know, everyone that's involved, your workers, your HR with their experience, work health and safety, if it is a group effort, then everyone's bringing their skills and knowledge and their experience of what they're going through. And you can get a good solution for the specific team, the organization, the group, whatever that may be. So yeah, really great points. Thank you for that. Now I want to jump into how can your tools help make it easier for employers to prevent harm and promote wellbeing at work?
Yeah, so it depends on the business size. So we do have a number of, Flourish DX Basic, which is a freemium version of the full platform that is available for smaller organizations. Our sweet spot is 1,000 employees and plus, because, you know, the larger the organization, the harder it is to consult well with staff. When it's a smaller organization, you can run focus groups easily enough, or, you know, understand the employee experience without having to do surveys. But once you get larger than 1,000, then really you want to get more of a quantitative understanding, where, like you say, you can drill down into groups within the business, whether it's a department, whether it's a specific team or what have you, to be able to quickly identify which teams are maybe having an issue, and focus your attention and resources to those teams rather than doing, you know, global interventions that might not be suitable for, you know, 90% of teams. So really focusing your resources. But also more frequently understanding the experience of workers. So the way that psychosocial risk assessments are often done is on a similar cadence to the employee engagement survey. It might only happen every 12 to 24 months if it's ever happened before, because again, we're talking about a lot of companies just being on the bleeding edge in relation to this. But a lot, as we've just seen over the last 2 years, Nicole, a lot can happen in 2 years. If you're only consulting with staff about the stresses involved with their work every 2 years, you can miss out on a lot of potential harm occurring. So what we were really conscious about was we don't want our surveys to be so academic that they take half an hour plus for employees to do. We don't want them to overlap significantly with the employee engagement survey. We're really conscious about how do we save companies time with also doing very good levels of consultation. So we have two tools in particular that are really helpful around psychosocial risk assessment. The one that's most innovative is what we call our work factors risk assessment tool. It actually, rather than using more of a psychology framework or employee perception style survey, which most listeners would be familiar with in terms of employee engagement survey methodology, where you might ask three or four questions to cover a construct like workload, and then people will answer on a like it type style response, strongly agree to strongly disagree, for example. Rather than doing that, what we're really conscious of is people can have different experiences of stress based on a range of different individual and personal and life characteristics. Not everyone who has a high workload is going to perceive that as stressful. Similarly, not everyone who has low autonomy is going to find that stressful. But, you know, there's generally an assumption of high workload, low autonomy equals stress. So what we've done is taken more of our occupational hygiene exposure assessment methodology, which looks at the severity of stress that people are experiencing in relation to different psychosocial hazards like work overload or job control. We look then also at the frequency and duration of that experience. And that actually aligns really well to the new regulations that have come out in Australia regarding psychosocial risk management. It does actually stipulate before putting in controls, companies must consider the severity, frequency, and duration of individual hazards, as well as the cumulative or the interaction of different hazards and how it might affect people's stress levels. And that's something that is really unique to Flourish DX. I haven't seen any other tool who have taken that exposure assessment methodology that covers those three levels, severity, frequency, duration, in trying to understand the stress experience of workers. So that one, we're getting to the point now where we're adding machine learning into to develop a predictive algorithm. And so the point is, like, within the coming months, we'll be able to say to a company, based on your risk assessment, if you were to do nothing, expect, say, 30% of your workforce to experience burnout, 20% to take time off work due to work-related stress. Yeah. So really actually giving companies an understanding of the likelihood and consequence of harm. And that is what a risk assessment should be. But even those tools out there that claim to be risk assessments using employee perception methodology, they don't actually give you likelihood and consequence of harm. They'll go, this is your score. This is the benchmark score. What does that mean? It doesn't tell you how many people are going to be harmed and in what manner. So that's the thing I'm most proud of, like actually changing the way that companies understand psychosocial risk. But then, you know, when we do that quickly, so most of those surveys take less than 10 minutes to complete versus your standard psychosocial risk assessments, which are generally 30 minutes plus. The other thing we're doing is helping companies to monitor hazards over time through an even more brief assessment, which we call our wellbeing check-in. It looks very much like a mood check-in, but rather than just asking people, how are you feeling? We ask about the personal factors and workplace factors that are contributing to either a positive or a negative mood. And what that can do within the space of a minute at scale is give you a very clear understanding of, okay, what is the temperature? Like, how are people feeling? But importantly, what are the psychosocial factors that are having a detrimental impact on people's wellbeing? So that psychosocial hazard identification done within a minute per person, rather than, again, using a bulky survey that might take half an hour. And because it's so brief, that means we can monitor hazards, you know, on a much more frequent basis, you know, maybe every month or two, rather than, you know, waiting a year or two in between kind of that consultation process with staff. And again, you know, therefore, we're going to be much more agile in terms of responding to hazards as they arise, rather than, you know, harm occurring and then us responding reactively. So, really proud of, I guess, what we're doing in relation to Flourish DX. Like I said, it's all about how do we scale psych health and safety, but meet the needs of organizations. And I've got to say, the needs of organizations are very different to the needs of academics who want to publish in top tier journals. Yeah. Organizations don't need that level of survey to be able to understand the context and do good consultation. So we're trying to bridge the gap between what organizations need and what is good science.
Yeah. And that mini pulse check would be great to do if you're going through a huge change process, which a lot of big organizations, 1,000+, they do frequently.
They do pretty frequently, yeah.
Yeah. So to check in and see how they're going and edit and make changes as they go, rather than get to the end of it and think, well, why hasn't everyone come along?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And getting that information down to a team level, right? And that's what we're very much interested in as well. So giving line managers permission to see data from their team, obviously aggregate anonymous level data. But don't just have that data sitting centrally with the HR team. Actually, once we've equipped line managers to understand how to use this with their teams and supporting them through the functional team members, then let's give them that information at that team level so they can more quickly respond rather than waiting for the organization to respond, which usually takes longer in a large bureaucracy.
Yes, it does. you should be proud because those tools sound amazing. And when you hear of a good product or service, you think, oh gosh, of course. Of course those things should be included. And that's exactly what I was thinking as you were explaining what was in there and the matrix and how to do that. So yeah, amazing work. You definitely should be proud. I did have an understanding of the business and what you provided, but that explanation is wonderful. So thank you for that.
Yeah, we probably need to hire some marketers to maybe sex it up a little bit more. I don't know. Yeah, we do need to get better at communicating exactly what we do. There's still some people who don't understand the difference between, say, what we do and, say, what people at work, a free tool from the government, does. Mm. And the differences. And, you know, yeah, I think people at work is probably a useful tool for a company between maybe 250 to 1,000 people, as long as you've got a consultant or someone internal who can help understand the results from that, because it's not as easy to understand as the data that gets spat out by our system. But 1,000+ companies need kind of different levels of enterprise level software, be that integration into other systems, you know, sharing of data between systems, permission settings so that you can provide different people with access permissions, having live data rather than, you know, waiting 3 months post a survey to actually have the data available. So there's lots of things that companies need with enterprise level technology. And that was always the aim of Flourish DX. It wasn't built for small businesses, even though we're trying to make it accessible for small businesses with, you know, and we continue to think about that. But particularly, we see the challenges of large businesses who generally are more sophisticated when they come to health and safety systems anyway. So it's a better fit. How do we help them to do this at scale well?
Yeah, fantastic. Great, thank you. Now, we're not there yet. I've got a couple more questions for you. But you are normally on the other side of the microphone. You also host the Psychological Health and Safety podcast, and you've interviewed over 100 people with that. I'd love to know, what's the most memorable interview you've done and why?
Okay, yeah, now this is an easy one for me. So the best interview that we've done is episode 55 on our podcast, if anyone's playing along from home and wants to listen. It was with Professor Tony LaMontagne. Now, Tony was the one who coined the term the integrated model of workplace mental health. And it's very much how the model that underpins our whole business. And it really is about And by the way, this aligns very well to the new WHO guidelines, which basically says in a holistic approach to workplace mental health, we need to think about mental health being a continuum. And employee in a large enough business, you're going to have employees at all different levels of that continuum, from, you know, diagnosable disorders to languishing to wellness to flourishing. So we really need to be having interventions at all different levels. And what we've seen in the past is there's a real fascination with the mitigate illness, or like the how are we responding when people are distressed or ill. So EAPs, peer support networks, you know, mental health first aid, you know, all that sort of stuff. But in the integrated model, it suggests, well, no, we should be starting with the prevention of harm. So as an employer, how can we prevent people getting distressed in the first place? What's within our remit and in our control? But also understanding that work can have a positive impact on people's well-being if done well. You know, what are the ways to promote the positive? How do we actually promote the positive aspects of work to promote positive states of mental health and well-being? Because if you have people thriving or flourishing, then obviously they're even less susceptible to mental illness. So the three levels of the model are prevent, promote, and then support or respond to mental illness, depending on whether you're looking at Tony's model or the WHO model. Our main focus is on prevention primarily, and then promotion a close second. We direct to people working in those supporting roles when employees, you know, do actually unfortunately become injured or become ill. So Tony, to talk to Tony was amazing, and I'd seen him present, you know, previously in person at conferences, and he came across as quite a dry academic when he's talking to us to slides. But getting him, you know, one-on-one or two-on-one, because Joelle, my co-host, and I were interviewing him together, and him just talking without a script, not having to talk to slides, being able to talk without having to, you know, think about the audience and go, I need to make sure that this resonates with people with very low levels of literacy, but actually get really into it, was amazing. And he was very passionate, might have dropped a couple of swear words because he was getting right on it. So he was Tony in all his glory. And it was a very good, very entertaining episode. And actually, behind episode one, it's our third most listened to or downloaded episode. The second most downloaded episode in our podcast is the one with David Burrows, who's the chief mental health officer at Westpac. And one of the OG consultants in the psych health and safety space. But again, he was on fire in that episode. So if you're going to listen to any of our episodes, Tony LaMontagne and Dave Burrows, yeah, top two for sure.
I might link to them below so people have easy access for them, and link to your podcast as well. But I just want to say a huge thank you for being involved and for sharing what you're doing for everyone here today. If people want to know more and learn more about Flourish DX or learn more about the services that you offer, what's the best way to connect with you?
Well, I'm probably on LinkedIn more than I should be. So yeah, if you DM me on LinkedIn or connect with me on LinkedIn, then you'll find that I'm pretty quick to respond that way, probably quicker than email. Yeah. So yeah, that's probably the easiest way. And if you want to find out about Flourish DX, you can just look up flourishdx.com. But I know that you're going to be providing some links on the page that this video will be on as well.
Yeah, sure will. Sure will. Thank you once again, Jason. I really love your work and I really appreciate you being a part of the summit. Thank you.
Thanks again for having me.
You've been listening to the Psych Health and Safety Podcast. To stay up to date with the latest on psychological injury prevention, follow Flourish DX on LinkedIn and subscribe to the Psych Health and Safety Podcast at www.psychhealthandsafety.com.